Feeling the love right here. Thanks for Zachshin and for all of you to know. For sure, Laura has been a great friend to me, and I'm super excited to just see her in this setting because we always share a lot about our faith and our journeys, and just know that you have a jewel in her because she's blessed my life. Do y'all mind if we open up, say a little prayer before we get in? It's hard to see feedback, so I'm not sure. Yes? Does that work?
Yes. Thank you.
Amen. Yes. Okay, wonderful. I'm just going to bow our heads. Thank you, gracious God, for this night and this opportunity with this beautiful woman and these beautiful souls of kindred. May you just bless this time, and we ask for your favor and for your grace. And as we connect for this short amount of time and in minutes, but large in terms of connection and remembering you. So have your way in this place now. In your name we pray. Amen. Amen. So, you know, it's a pleasure to join you. And, you know, Laura asked me to just talk a little bit about this recent book that I wrote, but ultimately share a little bit about my journey to the extent that, you know, folks in this room are interested in being wealthy girls. I know that I am a wealthy girl. you know, you guys are energetic, so I can share that with y'all. But in all seriousness, I want you guys to hopefully be able to own that by the time we leave this session. So we're going to come back to that, and we're going to say it together. And I know you've already had the icebreaker of group activity, so I'm excited for us to have some shouts soon. But just a little bit of inspiration for me and how we got here and how I got here to this moment. I had just given birth to my daughter, Gabrielle, in the spring of 2019, so just in about a month and a half from now, 2 years ago. And as I was looking at her face and thinking about, you know, all of the, you know, fun times that we have in the future, I thought to myself, wow, wouldn't it be great to have something for her to have when she gets older, and kind of just stories, not just of me, but of my mom and my grandmother. And so that really started a journey for me to write this book. And Lord knows that, you know, when it was time to go back to work after maternity leave, I was like, there is no way I'm writing a book. So put that down, tried to figure out how that I was going to do this new mom thing and, you know, just be present for her and for my husband, George. And then fast forward into the COVID environment, and all of us were literally stopped in our tracks. And, you know, God really put it on my heart to come back to the book and come back to the idea. I got connected with a publisher through my financial advisor, which I'll come back to in a little bit. But I got connected to a publisher, and I started really vibing with her. She was also a woman of faith, and that really helped me also get comfortable with how we could, you know, come up with some ideas. And I shared with her my vision for, let's talk about wealth, and let's talk about it not in the traditional sense, but let's talk about it expansively. And so then for the next 9 months, worked on the book and really tried to sit in what was happening around me and us with COVID-19, and recognizing also all of the inequities that were hitting communities of color, low-income communities, female communities, obviously, and, you know, we're the group also that has been disproportionately affected in terms of job loss. And so all of these things I was sitting with, and I wanted to channel that into this work. And so, you know, God really helped me, because I don't know how I would do it really without God's hand all over it. Those late nights, those, you know, desires. Oh, look at the, oh, hi, guys. Yes. That's fantastic. Now I see you. Hi.
Okay.
all those kind of latent and desires. But you know, God kept me moving, and you know, here we are with the finale. And I kind of wanted to share a couple of things about this book. I define wealth and what it means to obtain not just prosperity, which I define as more the traditional dollars and cents wealth. Textbook and Pew Research defines wealth as your total assets, your financial assets, your property, real estate, your business, minus your debts, mortgage, credit card, school, all of those. And that gives you your balance sheet, your own net worth, or your traditional wealth. But I truly believe, particularly as women, that we have all of these other assets. Like, I see this beautiful face on the screen here, Melinda's child, and our children are some of our most precious assets. They don't have a price tag on them, right? Nor do the relationships that we have in our lives, nor do the faith that we profess to be and hold true. And so I wanted to bring out that aspect of what makes us wealthy, and those intangible things really do. And so that is the message that I want to leave you with, sort of the headline. If you take away nothing else, I want you to know that, you are uniquely made, and your wealth is made up of more than the dollars and cents that sit in your bank account. And so part of that message is also rooted in, misconceptions that people have around their money. One of the big ones is that, I don't have the skill set or the knowledge to build it. Maybe my husband takes care of this, or I didn't learn this growing up, or, I am just tired and I don't understand math concepts. It makes it hard for me. But all of these things that we have in our head, I tend to want to bust them wide open, because you can learn to be wealthy. You can learn to also surround yourself with people. And that's going to be really important. The other misconception that we have, and I think we try to do this better in Christian communities, which is wealth. The world tells us that wealth is a very individualistic activity. If I do this, and if I do that, and if I achieve, and I have this great success individually, then that makes me a superstar. I don't believe that at all. I think we get wealthy both on the tangible and intangible side because of the collective community that in which we come from. Communities like this that are really supporting each other and trying to build one another up. And so those are, some of the things I want to leave you with in terms of misconceptions, but also how then we can tackle this. So I organized, my concepts of then how do you achieve not only the prosperity, but how do you achieve the peace and personal power that comes with having those intangible assets. And I believe you do that by having the environment that generates wealth creation, by learning how to work your craft. I know some of you are artists in here. Whatever your talent is, you work your craft and you do that well. You can do that also by developing an investor mindset, and we can get into that. You can do that also by running wealthy experiments. And the whole premise of that is, how can I have a whole approach around testing and learning and growing? We do that also by starting businesses and supporting the entrepreneurs around us. Not everybody is meant to be an entrepreneur in the more traditional sense, but entrepreneurship is a mindset, and we can support each other in businesses because of the economic impact that has to our country, the way in which we create jobs and also give ourselves freedom and independence. Women are the fastest growing segment of small business owners in this country, and have done so over the last 5 years. And then I talk about also how important it is to develop a faith muscle. And in my own journey, I'll just share a little bit about this. And and if you were to read more of the book, you find a little bit more detail. But I want to just share a story from there, and that because we're amongst moms and amongst friends in the safe community. My husband and I really struggled to have a child. And part of our own journey in doing so, we would, try and stay steadfast in prayer, but ultimately it came down to our faith. And, I don't remember the young woman's name who was talking at the beginning, but in terms of memorizing verses, the one that I have always memorized is Hebrews 11:1. You know, faith is a confidence in things hoped for and the assurance of things unseen. And so as part of our own faith journey and going through fertility treatments and fertility cycles, like that for us tested us. And on the seventh time, where we went through our own journey, we were able to conceive. And I shared that story in the safe space because of the way in which so many people, whatever it is that is your own journey, whether it's, for us, it was our fertility and conception journey, but I can apply those same lessons to work and to family and to things that we hope for and I hope for, but, you know, experience setback. I believe strongly that faith without action is dead. We find that in James, and part of, you know, developing a faith muscle is taking the action. And I know it can be sometimes even tension in Christian communities, like, well, if you have faith and believe in God, then, you know, just pray hard enough, it'll happen. Well, God also gives us free will and the opportunity to take action. And so you hold, and I held both of those. So that's just a little bit about, you know, that muscle. But I also talk about the importance of being a girl and how we utilize our collective power, but also how we can draw on the other women in our life. My grandmother, my mom, very important figures for me. My grandmother is still living. She's 92 years old and has a lot to say. And as part of her journey, and she was one who migrated from the South to the North in the Great Migration in the 1950s, she is the epitome of what it means to live out a life of faith. And I think we need to draw on those examples, draw on those stories, because they in turn give us the assets, intangible, to then go even get more of the tangible assets that we want in our life. And so you can't really have one without the other. I believe faith and God and wealth go hand in hand. It's really hard to have the wealth that you want and the life that you want without God. And that's, I know, been true in my life. And so I want to pause there because I've said a lot, but I know there might be some questions, and I'd love to also, and I know we had a couple of more questions teed up, but I just wanted to kind of start with that and see where the conversation takes us.
I don't think it's attached. Okay. No. Any questions? I have a question.
Okay.
Where do you start, Charisse? Like, if you are totally new to money, right? And you outsource it to your husband or dad or whoever, right? Where do you begin? What's your advice?
Yeah. Great question. I think you begin with a mindset. I want to challenge everyone in this room to think of themselves as the CEO of their wealth. And as CEO, it's your job to set the vision. So one simple way to do that, how many of you have created vision boards at any time in your life? One hand. And tell, and on the chat too, I see some here as well. A vision board, for those of you who haven't created it, it's, you know, really bringing to life visually what you want to see in your life. And part of that is ripping out pictures from magazines or newspapers, or drawing it on a piece of paper and putting it on a poster board. But that vision board helps to put in your mind frame what it is that you're aiming for. Why are you even trying to figure out what wealth you want to have and how you want to have it? Once you have that vision, helps you to claim that I want to be that CEO, I want to take control of that vision for my life. I recommend having a very simple framework for utilizing the money that comes in and then allocating it so that it goes out. And that framework is called Sip It and Live It. If you can do that, And I'll tell you what the acronym stands for in a second, but if you can do that, you're going to be able to start and follow through. Because actually, a lot of people are good at starting, but it's the follow through, it's sticking to budgets that trip people up. And so actually, I don't like using the word budget because I'm kind of a little anti-budget. I think budgets can feel so constraining. I'm like, I got a budget, and that just feels tough. But if you can think about it as an allocation strategy, who doesn't like to allocate and take advantage of opportunity? And so SIPPIN and LIVIN, the SIPPIN stands for saving. The S stands for saving. The I stands for investing. The P stands for paying down, and the other P stands for protecting. And then you can live off the rest of your life. And so I give very specific percentages of how much you should be putting into each bucket, such that you have some general guidelines for your own situation at different income levels to help set you up for that saving and that investing and still paying down your debt, because most people are wanting to do both at the same time. And then, you know, all the things that you need to do to live, eat, have fun. I don't believe that you should be restricting yourself also on some of the little things like a Starbucks coffee. You might do the drive-in, or in Chicago, we like Dunkin' Donuts. But whatever it is that you have as your, favorite things to do, if you can sit first and take care of some of those big buckets, I'm a big believer and, you know, just living and taking care of and having fun with the rest. So having a plan and a strategy that allows you to take action and allocate your money is really key. And then it's also the third thing I would say, Laura, is building the infrastructure around you, whether that is a financial advisor that keeps you accountable, whether it is a group of other women or family members that you can talk on a consistent basis. In my own family, we have a wealth circle. We meet once a month, and we talk about different wealth goals, and then how do we achieve them together? We invest together. We put money aside together for if someone needs it, then that pot of money is there. In some immigrant communities, particularly from the Caribbean, they would call that a susu. In other communities, particularly Asian communities, they would call it sometimes the money pot. In the southern communities, back in the 1800s, particularly communities of color too, they call that a mutual aid society. And so we have strength in the collective, and it's figuring out what infrastructure is going to help build you confidently and keep you accountable to your goals.
Awesome. Who is in her wealth circle again? Like,
is that another question?
Yeah, I can be the translator. Yeah. They want to know who is exactly in your wealth circle? Your family?
Yes. So who, if I heard you correctly, who exactly is in my wealth circle? Is that right?
That's right. Sorry, I have my mouth too. It's hard to hear.
Yep. There are 8 units, and a unit is a family unit. Some of those units are single, some of those units are married couples, but there are 8 of them in my wealth circle, and it includes my mom and dad, their unit. It includes an aunt of mine. It includes 5 cousins that are around my age. And it includes, another uncle. So there are 8 units. And I'll just give you an example. This past year, we decided to have a pot of roughly $3,500 a month that would rotate between each of the units. And every month, we all put in $500, and every month, one unit got $3,500 just to take advantage of Bitcoin, or to allow one of my family members to stay home another month for maternity leave. So she didn't want to go back to work, and she didn't have to because she had this extra money that allowed her to not have to go back to work.
I saw Ashley's question in the chat that I thought was a good one. Can you talk at all about scarcity mentality in the context of pursuing any kind of business?
Yeah, if I heard that, the ask of scarcity mentality and how And the second part of that was, how do you combat that, or do I deal with it?
She's asking in the context of pursuing a business, like starting a business.
Or in general, she says. I'm sorry?
Or in general. Whatever it's easier to
say. I'll talk about it in the context of building a business, because I've built businesses and I've seen others do it as well. One of the things, for instance, even that Laura and I, the reason why we know each other is we're on an investment committee together for a investment fund for alums of our alma mater. And but in my own journey, scarcity mentality comes as, you know, rears its head when you don't think that there's going to be enough, whether that's capital or resource, and it affects the behaviors that you make, or it prevents you from even starting or wanting to go further in a business. And Laura, this actually relates back to the Nehemiah Entrepreneurship Workshop series that I started at my church years ago. And how many of you, who can tell me who Nehemiah was, just in like 30 seconds? Who's Nehemiah?
He rebuilt the wall.
Perfect. He rebuilt the wall around Jerusalem. Absolutely. Before he rebuilt the wall, he was the aide to the king of Susa, and he was the cupbearer, actually. And so he tasted the wine before the king got it, in case the king was gonna die. Quite frankly, it's a really high position. And Nehemiah realized, you know, my home, where I'm from, is in disarray. I want to go back and rebuild the wall. And he was like, you know, he was pretty scared in order to do so. And he prayed and he asked God to make his hand strong and to provide the right resource. And in just over 50 days, Nehemiah rebuilt the wall. And I compare that to the entrepreneurial journey, because often we feel like we don't have the resources to do what we are called to do, even if that's a business. And so relating that back to feeling like we won't have enough, when you put things in God's hands, God's going to make more of it than you can have on your own. And so I would encourage you, as that relates to all assets of your life, God is going to do more of it and with it if you pray and give it over to him to do so, and really release control that you have to figure everything out by yourself. And ultimately, scarcity mentality is rooted in fear. God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of a sound mind. And fear is debilitating, quite frankly. Most people won't go out and start their business because of fear. But you don't have to be shackled to that, because y'all are wealthy girls. And once you begin to own that you can own that vision and build that faith muscle, it's doable.
I love that. That really resonates with me. Any other questions? I have another one. No.
Laura, what about you? Just for people feel like there's a stigma attached to that one.
Oh.
Or should you do a family?
Yeah. So do you have any tips for folks that feel that there's a stigma in talking about money, whether it's with family or friends or whatnot?
So if I heard you right, is there a stigma? There is a stigma to talk about money. Do I have any tips for overcoming the stigma?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So a couple of things I've noticed as I've experienced that stigma as well. But kind of sometimes at the root of the stigma is, one, we may not be used to talking about money within those circles. And so there is a bit of a taboo around it. And, or two, the stigma arises because you might feel that, you know, what you might have going on, people won't relate, or they're going to judge you, or you might feel ashamed about talking about money or about your situation. A couple of things I would say is when we're talking about, and I frame it also in terms of wealth, where you can talk about, and as I define it in a more holistic way, where how can you then create a safe environment where the guidelines for what you're going to discuss are upfront, and creating a dynamic and relationship with only people that you trust to have that conversation. What I have found is that in order to get over the stigma, people need to feel comfortable, people need to feel as if they're not going to be judged, and people need to feel like there's an equal sharing of information, even though some of that may be personal, it's still helpful to someone else. So if you give a little bit, someone else might give a little bit. And I'll take the issue around salaries. A lot of women don't talk about the salaries that they make and the money that they make, or did they ask for the raise or the promotion? And that actually, I think, leaves a lot of money on the table. And yes, people will be at different stages, people will be at different industries, but the art of negotiation, the art of, you know, what are you hearing, those all can be discussed with other people whom you trust, and kind of breaking down, again, the judgment, all in service of how do we help each other get to where we want to go? Because just in hanging around a lot more guys, they feel, and this is a generalization, but I have found this to be true, they often talk more about money. The stigma isn't as great. And they're more transparent about what they did and how they did it.
Thanks, Sharif. It looks like there's a question in the comments. Can you see that?
Yeah. So the question is, how did you all begin your wealth circle and decide who to have in it? Also, how do you all handle different views related to what to invest in or due to the benefit the circle? Great questions. I'll take the first one. How did you all begin with your wealth circle and decide who to have in it? Well, because I'm you know, known as the money girl in our family, but whoever might play this role in your family, it could be you too, even if you don't play this role. What you could do is, what we did is I sent an email out to the entire family. And when I say the entire family, it included the in-laws, it included the line of one of my trees. So my grandmother's line, and it included one side of the family. And that side of the family has about 35 people in it, including all of the in-laws and cousins and children. And so pretty much sent an open call. Hey, there's this concept, it's called a wealth circle. And it's really about coming together as a group to encourage each other, to support each other's wealth goals. And, you know, we use, instead of talking about politics, and instead of, you know, talking about matters that sometimes break us apart, let's use this opportunity to build wealth together. Because in my family, politics takes up a lot of airtime. And we wanted to have also something that was actually more life-giving than that. Had folks been opt into the wealth circle and giving very specific parameters around when you needed to let the group know that you wanted in, and we had those 8 units opt in, we had a call that said, you know, what are some of the goals and guidelines? What do we want to make of this for ourselves? So people also had the opportunity to make it what they wanted to, which also kind of gets to your second question. Having people figure out what they want to do and what's important to them was important level setting in the beginning to understand, like, what were we going to be focused on? In our wealth circle, we decided that real estate, small business and ventures, and the stock market, and then this sort of savings vehicle were going to be the four main things that we were going to focus on because of interest of the group. And we embraced opposite views on things, but ultimately we came up with a decision tree structure that we put on paper very important, that allowed us to also make decisions.
Awesome. Looks like we have time for one more question. Is that here? Yeah, go ahead.
What are some, like, really basic, I don't want to say mistakes, but starting points that people don't realize they can do to start moving them toward a more wealthy mindset and lifestyle when you're coming from, like,
nothing.
No idea
yeah.
at all.
So basically, when you're coming from nothing, like no understanding or kind of background in this, obviously very intimidating, what are some basic steps that folks can take to move the needle forward in building wealth?
Yeah.
I'll also just piggyback on that, Charisse, and just ask, because investing, just the term investing seems really scary for most people, and I feel like that's the start of a lot of wealth creation. Do you recommend doing it more directly or finding like a wealth manager to help you? I don't know. So that might be a separate question.
Yeah. A couple of things I would say. Number one, figuring out a way to educate yourself on some basic principles around investing can be really, really helpful. It could be taking a class. It could be following a blog like mine or someone else's, you know, that kind of shares the educational components of how do you think about the different types of options available to you and how can you start simply. You know, one of one of the easier ways to start is in your 401k if you're with an employer or a Roth IRA if you might not be with an employer and still want some extra tax benefits. Like, those are some easier vehicles because they're also invested in what we call mutual funds or exchange-traded funds. And pairing some of that education that you might get from a class or from these blogs such that you actually take even a small action. A lot of times, you know, employers, for instance, might automatically enroll you into a 401k plan. And a 401k is just, it's one type of retirement vehicle. You know, and you can start small in terms of your allocation. Or if you're not tied to an employer and, you know, maybe you're not working, you know, what is it that you can do to, you know, do a little research on a financial advisor that might be able to help you? I have a great video. It's on YouTube. It's like how to date your financial advisor, how to figure out like what questions you need to ask him or her in order for them to help you. How do you understand the fee structure? And so if you can start small with just one or two items, whether that's I'm going to commit to reading this blog or I'm going to commit to watching this video on how to find a financial advisor, or I'm going to commit to just dedicate 2% of my income to a 401k. I'm telling you, you don't have to feel 100% confident, but if you can get to about 70, 75% of the way there and just like hit the button or make the phone call, like you're gonna get there. Start small, incrementally increase your capacity and knowledge, and recognize that you might make mistakes, and that's okay because everybody makes mistakes. And surrounding yourself with either folks who can hold you accountable, like in the wealth circles, financial advisors, or other accountability partners that you can discuss things with. It can be very lonely doing it in isolation and feel very overwhelmed.
Can you send that that YouTube clip about dating your financial advisor?
Yeah.
I need to find a new one. I feel very disrespected. And I worked on Wall Street and I have an MBA and I feel like he just looks down at me and I'm like, this is not working. And yeah, we've been using him for 15 years. It's like way past due. So that would be awesome. Well, Charisse, this has been incredible. Even seeing you on a screen is just such a delight. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us and And I would just encourage anyone, if there are other questions, you know, let us know. I'm happy to funnel them Charisse's way. But honestly, a great starting point is just to check out her blog, Charisse Says, but buy her book. I mean, it really is just full of all these great nuggets, and she is just such a special person, and we're so excited to have her tonight and share. So,
she's social media too? Like,
yeah, you're on social, right?
Yes, I'm on all the channels except TikTok. I don't do TikTok. But yeah, you can find me, and I'll just put it in the chat at Charisse Says on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
Oh, there's the again, demystifying financial advisors. Perfect. Awesome. Well, Charisse, I don't know if you can stay for table time. No worries if not. I know you have the best excuse ever, probably just down the hall from you right there. But please join me in giving Charisse a big, warm thank you applause. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been nice, warm, and fuzzy.
All right, so I guess, Ashley, you're...
Are you
like, this is not my forte.